All right. Good morning, everyone. This is Commissioner Brian Kalker meeting for our regular scheduled commission meeting, although it is one day later than normally. We usually have these on Wednesdays. Today is Thursday, November 6th, approximately 10 a.m. We're meeting for our commission meeting. Just have a couple opening comments. The first thing I'll say, it's a pretty good day in North Dakota. We'll go down the rundown, the agenda. We've got the Hays and Bison are still undefeated. The North Dakota State Bison are still undefeated. It's deer hunting season Friday at noon, so we're excited about that. Monday is the Marine Corps birthday. Tuesday is Veterans Day. And Commissioner Fedorchuk and I get to stay with Randy two more years. So I'm pretty excited about that. So with that, I'll turn it over to my colleague.
I'll only say that nobody's more happy about that than I am.
Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner Fedorchuk?
I don't have any opening comments. Just got a lot of work on the agenda already, and
yes,
things keep rolling, so get at it.
All right, sounds good. There were several items on consent. I'd move passage of the consent items.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
Darrell, I just want to, usually I don't want to talk about consent, but the I did want to highlight, there's some things that are on consent, and Vince and I talked about this. We added numerous prima facie cases dealing with northern excavating, and I left them on consent because these are just determined prima facie cases, and we'll be dealing with them when we set the hearing dates. But there are 5 different motions on consent, all dealing with complaints filed by staff against northern excavating. The first block of three is dealing with, once again, background northern excavating. They're a company out of Jamestown. We have cases in front of us for a December 5th hearing all dealing with the city of Ross, numerous cases filed against them by staff. But now this is a new batch, if you will, and they're broken down. I'll just go through them real quick. Consent BK4, Northern Excavating, complaint by MDU in the city of Ross, three cases, recommended fines by staff of totaling $15,500. The next case, consent BK5, is the same thing, Northern Excavating. Complaint filed by RTC in the city of Ross. Staff recommended complaints or a fine $5,500. Consent BK6, it's dealing with the gas case filed by MDU against Northern Excavating in the city of Ross. Staff recommends fine of $6,500. Consent BK7, filed by MDU against Northern Excavating also in the city of Ross. Staff recommended fine $7,500. And consent BK8, complaint filed by MDU against Northern Excavating. This one's in Bismarck, electric case. Staff recommends fines of $7,500. So the way this works is this deems a prima facie case. Our staff will file the formal complaint to the company, Northern Excavating. They have 20 days to respond, and then we'll either move forward with the hearing or whatever might happen to be next. But, you know, the last time we dealt with this was the same company. I think the fines then were over $17,000 recommended by staff, and I said that was by far the biggest that we dealt with in the commission. And we're still waiting for the hearing to play itself out, but this is the next round, if you will, and so I'm looking forward to how this all plays out. But I would say that I appreciate staff that getting through their investigation, proposing what they think is appropriate, and then so we can get to these. So that would be my comments, I guess.
I would just also comment regarding the grain licensing. It looks like it's really enormous changes.
For the rules package.
In the rules package. It looks like, you know, kind of very significant changes. But a lot of it's just kind of rewriting and kind of using more up-to-date form and format. The increases in bonding were recommended highly by our audit last summer when that came out. And what we've kind of worked to do in this package is focus the increases on the types of situations where the most problems have been in the last 10 or 15 years, and that is a bit of an increase on new licensees, on some facilities with really extraordinary volume in addition – annual volume in addition to their capacity. It would provide an option where they could actually reduce their bond by having a quicker conversion policy. And it does increase the maximum bond as these elevators have merged and grown. It increases that cap, and then also on the roving grain buyers. But there will be a hearing scheduled for that and the comment period and that sort of thing. So I'm sure we'll get a much more feedback on these proposed rules as they get published and people have something really to comment on other than a concept. So I'm really looking forward to getting the feedback both from the ag producers and the grain dealers.
I just want to take a second to thank you, Randy, for your work on this. It's something that we, in our distribution of work and through the portfolios, kind of divvy things up, and you've done a great job getting these proposed rules out there, and it's an important next step in meeting some of the audit recommendations and also just making our rules and our procedures here more relevant to how ag business operates today. So I, too, look forward to hearing from the industry and the folks who are going to be impacted by these rules so we can come up with what works best for everybody involved, both the companies, the grain warehouses and the grain dealers, as well as the farmers who these rules are intended to help protect. So I think you've reached a good compromise here, but I guess we'll see what the folks involved have to say about it.
Yeah, and I just would point out this has been a lot of work for our staff, and I thank them for all the extra efforts in addition to the regular work that they do.
The last time these rules were updated was 1999, is that
most
correct?
Of them, correct.
Yeah, the bonding levels. So this is a pretty substantial proposal, and we'll be working through closely with it for the next couple of months.
In our work sessions, Randy and Julie both pointed out the work that staff and everyone put into this, but we know our staff has received a lot of questions and concerns from folks out there that these rule changes will affect. They need to come to the hearing when it's scheduled and tell us their concerns. That's the biggest thing about this is a process. So we put those out there now. The industry looks at them. Individual citizens come back. But they need to come tell us just like we do in all of our hearings because we've heard there's some discussion out there. But they need to come in front of us so we can have the back and forth between the commissioners and them about what their concerns might actually be and how it might affect them one way or the other. So, but, yeah, thank you for putting this together.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
All right. Thank you, Darrell. Okay, we'll go into our regular scheduled agenda, item BK1. I move the commission adopt the order on eligible telecommunication carrier designation, Tempo Telecom, LLC, designated eligible carrier application case number PU14-34.
Second.
In January of this year, Tempo Telecom, owned by Birch Equity, a Georgia company, operated under Georgia law, filed an application for designation as an eligible telecommunication carrier, or ETC, for the purpose of receiving federal universal service support for low-income consumers. The designation is known as Lifeline Only, ETC. Tempo proposes to provide prepaid Lifeline universal services to qualifying low-income consumers as a commercial mobile radio services carrier throughout North Dakota wire centers currently served by Sprint. And there's a map that we can show you. Julie Prescott has it, but that's roughly 45 communities throughout North Dakota that this area would cover. In January of this year, the commission issued a notice of opportunity for hearing, provided until March 2014 for comments and requests for hearing. No comments or requests for hearing were received. In January of this year, the commission requested additional information from Tempo. In February, Tempo filed a certificate relating to orders provisions with some special conditions the commission asked for. The commission held an informal hearing in March. And on April 10th, Tempo filed an amendment to the application based on some questions we had in our work session. Tempo is a business that's been operating in North Dakota since August of 2013. They are in appropriate standing with the Secretary of State's office. They have the resale agreement with Sprint. Tempo has an adopted compliance plan filed with the FCC on June of 2012. It was approved by the FCC in August of 2012, which is one of the major criteria for us to move forward on this. And basically everything appears to be in order. The one provision that's on here that I think is a very good idea, also set up by Commissioner Crispin a while back, was Tempo Telecom shall file at least annually or more often if requested by the PAC a complete list of Tempo Telecom's North Dakota consumers and waivers for each customer on the list included in the North Dakota Department of Human Services. So we're trying to make sure there's not double counting in some of these people. And that's one of the things the FCC is working on, a big database, but that provision I think really helps us out. So we can do what we can in North Dakota to make sure there's not abuse in this system. So the matter thing appears to be in order.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none. Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Thank you, Darrell. Item BK2. I move the commission deem the application for a third site plan option complete and issue a notice of filing, notice of informal hearing, and notice of opportunity for hearing in Sunflower Wind Project LLC Wind Energy Conversion Facility, Stark and Morton Siting Application, case number PU14-105.
Second.
We've got a motion coming up later where it's similar, where the company's asked for some modifications in the turbine. In that case, we're actually having a hearing, but I'll kind of walk through this one as a little bit different. This is actually more recent, maybe. In June of this year, the commission issued a certificate of site compatibility number 39 to Sunflower Wind LLC, authorizing construction of a 110-megawatt Sunflower Wind project using either 55 Vestas 2.0-megawatt turbines or 59 GE 1.8 to 187 turbines associated in Stark and Morton counties of North Dakota. Just to refresh everyone, the proposed wind farm southwest of the city of Hebron or southeast of Richardson, south of I-94, is the area that the commission has previously approved a wind farm for those either of those turbines. And what the company has filed, now they're actually into buying turbines, and they've got what they – here's what I anticipate we're going to hear, I guess. I shouldn't get too far ahead of myself. They've got a better deal on these other turbines, which are the 55 Vestas 2.0-megawatt turbines, so they want to use those, I suspect, in their wind farm. So that was not discussed in the hearing. So what we did in this particular case, we did have a work session where the three of us talked about this and also the Maricart wind farm, which you'll see in a bit. In this one, we opted that a comments and requests for hearing must be received by December 18th of 2014. If we don't have any requests for formal hearing, December 16th at 1:30 p.m., we'll have an informal hearing. So if someone requests a formal hearing, we'll certainly go back out to the city of Hebron and do that. Otherwise, I think the questions that we ask will be really the same questions, whether it's an informal or formal hearing. I think an informal hearing in this case seems to be very appropriate.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Thank you, Darrell. Item BK3. I move the commission adopt the consent order and the Public Service Commission Molstead Excavating, Inc. Damage Prevention Enforcement, case number PU14-499.
Second.
Molstead Excavating is a North Dakota corporation with offices located in Grand Forks, North Dakota. In June of this year, the commission received a North Dakota one-call complaint from Nodak Electric. The complaint alleged a violation by Molstead of North Dakota Century Code, Chapter 4923, our one-call evacuation notice system. There are a few things that can waive the one-call notice, such as an emergency. When the no locate is called in, the companies have 48 hours. The one call has 48 hours to go out and do the locate. In this case, our staff determined that on June 2nd, Molstead provided an excavation notice to North Dakota One Call for work to begin on June 4th. But then before the work started, they actually requested a relocate on June 9th for work to begin on June 10th. But our staff concluded an investigation that on June 9th, Molstead began an excavation defined under North Dakota law. As you can see, that would be before the June 11th, which was the 48 hours, so the locate period was not expired. So the NODAC facilities were damaged during the excavation. Cost of damage was approximately $2,649. 1,000 customers lost service for approximately 1.5 hours. There were no critical facilities such as hospitals or clinics. Based on the investigation, staff concluded there was no agreement between Molstead and NODAC, and staff concluded that Molstead violated North Dakota Century Code by failing to provide an excavation notice at least 48 hours before beginning its excavation. In this case, the company has agreed to repaying NODAC for the damages of $2,649, and the commission orders a Molstead to pay a fine of $2,500 payable to North Dakota PSC/General Fund within the next 10 business days of this order. So long and short of it, the company had filed the locate, but they did not wait until the locate was completed. They went out there, hit some facilities, damaged it. 1,000 customers lost service for an hour. And the fine today that they agree with is $2,500. So this is why that's why it's a consent order.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Thank you, Daryl. Item BK4. I move the commission adopt the consent order and the PS Public Service Commission Aqualawn and Landscape Inc. Damage Prevention Enforcement, case number GS14-724.
Second.
Excuse me. Aqualawn and Landscape is a North Dakota corporation with offices located in West Fargo. In September of this year, the commission received a North Dakota one-call complaint from Xcel Energy alleging that a violation by Aqualawn of North Dakota took place where they violated North Dakota Century Code, particularly the one-call excavation notice part of it. There are some provisions that allow people to not use one-call, such as an emergency. You need to make sure the excavation is done in a careful and prudent manner. A lot of code in there which says a little background on it, but I'm going to get right to the investigation summary. Staff determined that the Aqualawn looking back up here, there's a little bit of difference here. Staff determined that Signature Landscapes, rather than Aqualawn, provided an excavation notice to North Dakota One Call. And that's one of the things that we're starting to see a little bit, where there's almost like the sub of the sub is doing the locate request. And so we're now starting some more discussion about who can do that and trying to really clean that up. But basically, so staff has worked through that a little bit, and there'll be more of the discussion in the One Call meetings that I have. But staff concluded that on July 24th, Aqualawn began an excavation as defined under North Dakota Century Code while performing a sprinkler system install in West Fargo, North Dakota. Staff concluded that a natural gas line was damaged during the excavation and the amount of damage was approximately $800. The line was properly located in Mark. One customer lost services. No critical facilities such as hospitals or clinics were affected by the incident. But based on the investigation, staff concluded that Aqualawn violated North Dakota Century Code by failing to conduct the excavation in a careful and prudent manner. So this is not the first time we've seen this, where a company has a locate that is valid, but when they get out there, they're not careful as they get close to the system, and they hit the pipe, what it comes down to. In this case, the staff recommended a fine of $1,000, which Aqualawn agrees, so that's why it's a consent order. I think it is very appropriate. One of the questions that I did have and kind of walked through was why the previous fine was $2,500 and this one is $1,000. So the previous fine dealt with 1,000 customers. This one dealt with one customer. So we're trying to really be measured as we do the variation on fines. Both companies, it was the first time. But I think that staff is doing a very good job on being measured as they make their recommended fines, which is why I'm so looking forward to those hearings that your fines in the consent order are so large. So I know there was some thought process put into that. But in this case, everything appears to be in order, and I do appreciate the work of everyone involved. We just obviously got to keep getting the word out because people are still out there not digging carefully or not calling one call.
We have a motion, a second. Is there further discussion?
I just throw in here, since we had a couple of these today on consent and on the regular agenda, that we can't overestimate the importance of the damage prevention program, this one, and programs that the companies have in place. They're spending a lot of money to protect their infrastructure, and it is just vitally important. If you look at what PHMSA examines in terms of measures to protect the pipeline infrastructure in this country, damage prevention is one of the key steps. And so we really have to stay focused on this. Our fines are part of it. The contractors working with their members to educate them on the proper excavation techniques and doing a good job out there is a key part of it. And then people just taking the time to get the locates. We just have to stay really focused on this. We haven't had any bad accidents, but boy, we sure could if the right kind of line is struck, and it could be really devastating to an individual and a community. So we really have to stay focused on this and keep the pressure on these companies to do it right.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Okay, thank you, Daryl. The last item I have today, item BK6, I move the commission deem the application for turbine site plan revisions complete, issue a notice of filing and notice of hearing in EDF Renewable Development, Inc., Maricourt Wind Project, citing application case number PU08932.
Second.
In June of 2011, the commission issued a certificate of site compatibility number 23 to Anexco Development Corporation, authorizing construction of its proposed 150-megawatt Maricourt wind project consisting of up to 100 GE 1.5-megawatt wind turbine generators and associated facilities in Dickey and McIntosh County of North Dakota. For those of you that, just to walk back through it, this is northeast of the Ashley area is where the proposed layout is. I was on the commission at this time when we had those hearings, and there's certainly been a lot of discussion about this particular wind farm. That we approved the application back in June of 2011. It looked like Maricourt was going to sell the wind power to Xcel Energy at that time. That deal kind of went south. There was litigation between those two companies that took place, and a lot of different things that took place in that. Now what we've seen is different companies coming back, and they really want to see about getting this built, but they would like to use up to 75 Vestas V100 2.0-megawatt turbines. So it's similar to our previous order that, or previous notice that we had, but what's different about this one, I think, that came out in the work session, this one is certainly much older since the commission has held a hearing. When we had the hearing dealing with Hebron, there was a lot of discussions about the two different wind turbines and how that might affect noise and shadow flicker, and I think we had a lot of discussion. I know we had a lot of discussion about what that could mean, but in this particular hearing, we talked specifically about that turbine. And so I think it's very appropriate to go down and do a formal hearing on this. And so a public hearing for this application is scheduled for December 22nd, 10 a.m. at the City Hall in Ashley, North Dakota. And we'll consider all the appropriate things that we do in siting of a wind farm. So I think that we've done a good job here of making sure we protect public interest when there are changes. We've also, I think, got a good way of measuring this, where something that is this dated, going back to a hearing that was held in 2011, we're going to go back out there and have a formal hearing on this one and allow those interested to come and actually make it easier for them to come. And I look forward to actually the informal on the Hebron case as well as the formal on this.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Thank you, Darrell. That concludes my portfolio. Commissioner Chrisman.
I only have one agenda item today. I move the commission adopt an order in case number RC-14-712, a notice of violation number 1402, issued to BNI Coal Limited at the Center Mine, to affirm the violation, assess a civil penalty, and close the case upon payment of the penalty.
Second.
During a September 3rd inspection of the Center Mine, Guy Welch observed that topsoil had been stockpiled in an area that is outside of the approved permit boundary and that heavy equipment was traveling on a closed county road that is only partially located within the permit area. Permanent permit boundary markers were not in place in this area, and it appeared that temporary wooden stakes had been recently placed to mark the permit boundary. Workers were relocating the portion of the topsoil stockpile that had been located off permit onto the permitted area. The notice of violation was issued to BNI 6 days later on September 9th, and the notice of violation was terminated a month later on October 6th after staff determined that all of the required remedial action items were satisfactorily completed. Since an informal conference or hearing was not requested, the commission needs to assess a civil penalty and adopt a final order in this matter. The commission must consider four factors in determining the amount of their civil penalty. The factors are the history of previous violations, the seriousness of the violation, the negligence, and then good faith in attempting to achieve rapid compliance. So the first of those, based on the criteria we have used in the past, BNI does not have a history of violations that requires a penalty to be assessed, so the recommended penalty assessment for history is zero. The violation did cause some minor damage, namely the stockpile and a topsoil off permit, and the soil compaction resulting from the heavy equipment traversing the undisturbed area. So the recommended penalty assessment for seriousness is $500. Penalty based on negligence due to lack of diligence and reasonable care is warranted, and so the recommended penalty assessment for negligence is $1,500. And then finally, the fourth of those factors, we can deduct up to $1,000 per day from the civil penalty when the permittee takes extraordinary measures to abate the violation in the shortest possible time. However, no deduction can be made for just normal compliance. And in this case, their action was swift, but it was really normal, too. So therefore, a deduction for good faith is not warranted. So in conclusion, the Reclamation Division recommends that the Commission assess a civil penalty in the amount of $2,000, $500 of that for seriousness, $1,500 for negligence, and this order would close the case upon payment of the penalty.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
That concludes my agenda.
All right, thank you, Commissioner. Fedorchuk.
I have three items, all of them related to pipelines today. First item, I move the Commission issue a notice of opportunity for hearing in Basin Transload LLC to Soro High Plains. Transfer of quarter certificate and route permit citing application case number PU-13-872.
Second.
On November 6th of 2013, Basin Transload and Tesoro High Plains Pipeline submitted a joint application for the transfer to Tesoro of Certificate of Corridor Compatibility Number 145 and Route Permit Number 157 for the construction, operation, and maintenance of 4 miles of 10-inch crude oil pipeline and associated facilities in Mercer County, North Dakota, originally issued to Basin on September 25th of 2013. Those interested are invited to comment on the application in writing. Comments and requests for hearing must be received by December 12th.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
My second item, I move the Commission deem complete the applications of Caliber Midstream Partners LP for a waiver of procedures and time schedules, a corridor certificate, and a route permit. I further move the Commission issue a notice of filings and notice of hearing in Caliber Midstream Partners LP 6-inch NGL pipeline project, McKinsey County siting application, case number PU-14-689.
Second.
On August 15th of this year, Caliber Midstream Partners filed an application for a certificate of corridor compatibility and a route permit for a 4.4-mile, 6-inch natural gas liquids pipeline and associated facilities in McKenzie County. The Commission deems this application complete for the waivers of procedures and time schedules and the entire application is complete, and we'll set a hearing date during the scheduling section of our meeting during admin. But this is basically it's a $2.8 million project. It's kind of an interesting application. There was a number of pipelines, I think five in one corridor that were constructed. The landowners all were in agreement along this line back when this gathering system was put in place that all of the lines had to be constructed at the same time. They didn't want multiple construction projects coming back and back and back, so they required five different lines to be put in one corridor. This was one of the lines. They have since decided to convert it to an NGL line rather than a gas, natural gas line. And so this project is already constructed, and so this is a conversion, and this would be a 6-inch NGL line that would run from the Caliber's Hay Butte processing plant, which is a small facility, to the One Oak NGL line. And it's located south and a little bit, straight south of Highway 85 between Arnegard and Alexander in McKenzie County.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
OK, Okay, my last item. I move the commission deem complete the applications of Tesoro High Plains Pipeline Company, LLC, for a waiver of procedures and time schedules, corridor certificate, and a route permit, and issue a notice of filings and notice of opportunity for hearing in the Tesoro High Plains Pipeline Company, LLC, Bakken Area Storage Hub, Williams County Siting Application Case Number PU-14-730.
Second.
On September 25th of 2014, Tesoro High Plains Pipeline Company, LLC, filed an application for a certificate of corridor compatibility and route permit for an existing 12-inch pipeline approximately 1,500 feet long and associated facilities in Williams County, North Dakota. Anyone interested in commenting on this application can do so in writing, and we must receive those comments by December 12th of 2014. This project is straight south of Tioga. It is already existing. It's a big storage facility run by Tesoro High Plains. There is currently capacity at this facility of about, I think, 300 and some thousand barrels of crude oil. And Tesoro wants to increase, add a number of storage facilities, 620,000 barrels of additional storage, and this convert this short pipeline. And the whole goal of the project is to just provide more storage so they can better handle and more efficiently manage their product and then maximize the capacity of the existing pipeline. The total they would be able to handle more than 900,000 barrels at the completion of this project, and up to 100,000 barrels per day. It's a $31.5 million project. It would be entirely encompassed on a 40-acre parcel of land that they already own. And so this is another example of companies looking at what types of facilities they have and how they can maximize the infrastructure to handle the most possible crude and products that they have. And so I think that it'll be a good, interesting project to examine in more detail in the next couple of weeks.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
Daryl, I would just add that with my Marine Corps background, we love acronyms. And so that the Bakken Area Storage Hub is known as BASH, just for those in the media. Do you see that acronym? So I saw that. I appreciate the company trying to save some words.
Yeah.
This is the BASH facility.
The BASH. All right. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
That concludes my portfolio.
Thank you, Commissioner. Just a couple of closing comments, and we'll open up questions. I forgot in the beginning to welcome Kathy to the Public Service Commission. Kathy is now working over there in public utilities, so those in the media might be talking to her once in a while about different things. We have an informal this afternoon. Our next regular scheduled commission meeting is also on a Thursday, November 20th, and that's because NARUC is that week beforehand. Got a variety of hearings coming up. I did want to highlight one thing that's on our discussion. The Devil's Lake Refinery is on our discussion matters, and all that we'll talk about with my colleagues more, but for the media, we were contacted by Devil's Lake Forward, the group, and they're having an open house / discussion meeting about what the potential refinery might mean to them on November 24th at Lake Region State College. So we don't have a lot of play in a refinery of the size proposed in Devil's Lake, but we are going to talk about sending someone up there from staff just to answer some questions. But I thought it might be appropriate for the media because the city of Devil's Lake, I guess, has had a lot of discussion about this refinery, and from what we've heard, we've not seen anything on it, but we sure get asked a lot of questions about it. So. And that's the only thing that I had, Commissioner Chrisman or Fedorchuk. Any closing comment?
I do not.
No closing comments.
Okay. Any questions at all from our members of the media?
Commissioner Fedorchuk, you were drowned out by the jackhammer there. What was 35.5
million? 31.5
million. The wind project, the Maricourt.
Right.
So do they still have a valid site permit for that with the PSC?
They do. If they chose to build the turbine with the, I'll pull, pull it up here to give you the specifics. But the certificate's valid for 4 years, so they certainly do. If company would like to build a turbine or a wind farm with 100 GE 1.5 megawatt turbines, they certainly could. But what they're requesting is the modification, so they cannot build it with 75 2.0 turbines because our order says specifically the 100 1.5s. And what we're seeing now is that companies, we just had a hearing in Beulah, and it's a pending case. I won't talk much more about it than that. But during the hearing, the company laid out three different options of turbines they may be using. And I think that's a bit, you know, now given the turbine prices fluctuating in availability, that's a better way to do it going forward. But in this particular case, that's what they asked for. That's what we approved. So if they want to modify, they need to have a change in certificate.
I know one of the big oppositions to that project back in 3 years ago was the potential effect on two bird species, a whooping crane and a piping plover, I think it was.
Right.
You know, do they have, have they obtained a fish and U.S. Fish and Wildlife permit to allow, I mean, has that issue been resolved?
That's one of the questions that we'll ask, but I'll go back to memory here a little bit. One of the challenges that was set up was the owner of that wind farm at that time, the developer, Inexco, they chose to not even, you know what, I don't think it has not been resolved for the Inexco. I don't know what's been resolved for this current company. We'll see at the hearing. But for Inexco, during the hearing, we asked a lot of questions about the flyway, and I remember more it was a whooping crane, and they chose to not participate in the habitat conservation plan or really do anything with the Fish and Wildlife Service. So there was a big question about who takes the risk if they would happen to have an incidental take of a whooping crane. And so the company takes the risk is what it comes down to. And then some of the discussion was if the company in Exco has the risk and then they're going to sell the power to Xcel. And there's a lot of other things that happen there with costs. But the deal with Xcel fell apart. So Inexco still has a valid certificate, and they're still trying to get a project out of it, I think is where we're at now. And that's one of the reasons why I think it's really important to go back and have the hearing so we can ask that question that you're asking. And you know, really, if a company chooses to not file a habitat conservation plan, I mean, it's a big decision factor for us. And that's one of the things that we've seen in other wind farms where they've chose to participate, and we will go forward with it. But that's part of the process, I guess.
Commissioner Crispin, could you summarize the reasons you're making these proposed rules regarding elevator bonding requirements?
Well, the why each of these specific areas, or just the general?
Just the general review about what you see happening, why these things are needed.
Well, you know, in the past 15 years or so, that's about how far we really look back. There have been a number of insolvencies over those years. And, of course, there were a few of them where we were able to capture grain and restore most of the ag producers pretty well. But there's been some of them where it was very minimal. You know, one thing that I think that's oftentimes misunderstood by ag producers is what kind of level of bonding really is available. I think oftentimes these producers think that the fact that some place is bonded means that if anything goes wrong, they're going to get covered. And the fact is these bonds that are in place are nowhere near enough to recover all the potential liability that could be at one of these places if we're unable to capture grain and if they have run up a lot of storage tickets over a long period of time. So bottom line is that there's been some very minimal repayments to some producers. And, you know, the last time this was addressed was actually in 1999. It's been a long time, a lot of inflation, a lot of change in the industry where we have fewer and fewer grain warehouses, but more and more grain capacity because they're merging as well as growing. And so it does seem like a very good time for a revisit. Also, it was one of the suggestions that was mentioned in our audit was that they recommended higher bonding levels. And in talking to people within the industry, of course, one of the concerns is, well, you know, they'd like to see it focused more on the places that are probably more vulnerable or more likely to suffer an insolvency. If you look at traditional grain warehouses that have been around a while, there are instances of them having problems, but very few. It usually has to do with ag processors or organic places or roving grain buyers or real new upstarts. Mm-hmm. And so those are kinds of the areas that we're focusing this, as well as increasing the maximum where at which point that there's no more additional bond for capacity. We're looking at increasing that a little bit. But so that's kind of the genesis of it. It's been a long time. There's been some problems, and I think it needs to be readdressed.
Is an idea, percentage-wise or dollar-wise, what the increase is in bonding requirements?
Because there's different categories, but what these would amount to is for new warehouses in their first 6 years of operation, their bonding amount would be about 30% higher. And when I say about, keep in mind, a real small operator, there's a minimum $50,000 bond. And so, with some of the minimums and maximums, sometimes these percentages don't come out exactly the same. But so roughly a 30% increase for operations within their first 6 years. I'm going to page through this so I don't miss one of the categories, if you give me a minute here to... I'm looking in my own portfolio, and that was in the consent calendar. So the new operators was one of them. Then, the second one was for very large capacity places. They're required to convert scale tickets within 45 days. We have grain warehouses out there that exceed, that their volume in a week exceeds their capacity, that turn over that quickly. And so if they go for 45 days without converting their tickets, it's an enormous amount of grain compared to what they have bonding. So part of this proposal is that for those facilities where their volume exceeds their capacity by 7 times, which there's not a lot of those. After they exceed it by 7 times, there would start to be an additional assessment that would amount to about 20 cents per bushel, which incidentally is the amount that they pay on their bond for capacity in excess of 500,000 bushels. This also offers an opportunity for any grain warehouse to reduce their bond if they commit to a faster conversion policy than the 45 days required by law. This would allow them, if they commit to a conversion policy of 21 days or less, they could get a 15% discount. And if they keep it at 10 days or less, it could be a 30% discount, which 30%, incidentally, would offset that increase for the new grain warehouses. Like I said, it increases the maximum from 1.5 million to 2 million. And then lastly, for roving grain buyers, it would increase their bonds. And they're not bonded based on capacity. They're bonded based on their annual volume. And it would increase that to 50 cents a bushel for the first 500,000 bushels and 20 cents a bushel after that.
I might just throw out a couple of thoughts on the 45-day conversion incentive. This is an area where we've seen, in some of the insolvencies that grain warehouses will have scale tickets that they haven't converted far beyond the 45 days. And that 45 days is intended to reduce the potential losses. If the scale tickets are converted, you'll have only 45 days worth of scale tickets that are, potentially lost versus, you know, if you haven't have 120 or 6 months worth or whatever. It's a popular practice with the both the elevators and the farmers to kind of wait and see and look at prices and look at tax situations, et cetera. So they like the flexibility of going, you know, deciding when they're going to sell and convert. But this takes a proactive approach of incentivizing them to convert early rather than, you know, getting real heavy-handed and you know, demanding it and investigating when they don't, et cetera, providing a really appealing incentive to have a conversion policy that's more proactive and gets the conversions quicker so you don't have as many potential losses. So I really appreciated that proposal that Randy and staff included in this rulemaking plan.
I think Julie reminded me of something, as did Brian here, that two different things. So one is on these conversions, you know, more important than what we do here with this bonding rule is the reaction from the ag producers. And, you know, oftentimes, especially in areas where there's not a competitive grain dealer close by, you know, if farmers aren't getting paid and they have tickets that are more than 45 days old, we've had some of these cases where they become insolvent and farmers come to us with tickets that are 6 months or a year old. And, you know, had they brought it up earlier, we may have been able to minimize the amount of, of their neighbors that have losses, as well as capture more of the grain before it got shipped out and do more to help them. So it's important that farmers let us know and not be so concerned about not causing trouble for the grain dealer if they're not getting paid. But the other thing, this is one piece of a whole larger puzzle. And in this particular piece of the puzzle, it's addressed in rules. We're going to be proposing, I believe, some law changes in the next session too. And you know, in this kind of banter back and forth, you know, with the grain dealers who don't want to offend their farmers, who don't want to sign a contract, but they don't want to take their money in 45 days. They're still deciding what they want to do. And, of course, the grain dealers like happy customers, too. But one of the things that I'm certainly looking at is providing, but this would have to not be done by rule, but by law, an opportunity where the grain dealers could potentially have the farmers sign off on it that they don't want to do either one. They don't want to convert their ticket, but they don't want to sign a contract, but they understand that they are relinquishing their protection that is afforded to them in the normal course of business. And that way we're not forcing the farmers into making a decision they don't want to make, but we're not causing their neighbors to have more vulnerability by running up the amount of liability that a grain warehouse has. There will be several legal changes, I expect, in the next session addressed.
What's the deadline for commenting on this proposed rule change?
We have to schedule a hearing, and then
10 days
after the hearing is the end of the comment period.
The hearing hasn't been scheduled yet, though?
No, it has not.
The big thing today
was scheduling that today, won't we?
To get the clock ticking, today was the big deal. Yeah, would you?
I think it has to be 30 days, no less than 30 days or something from now, right? Because these have to be published, and so it'll take a little while.
Well, yeah, as Julie pointed out, we're scheduling that later on today in scheduling. We'll schedule the hearing with those parameters. So we'll have a date. We could get to you, Mike, later today if you want. Okay, any other questions, gentlemen?
Yes, do you remember offhand how many complaints are pending against Northern Excavating?
14 or 15, Victor. I just threw a blank there.
14.
14, yeah, 14 complaints.
Most of them in the Ross area? Or
all but the one in Bismarck that was the last one that MDU filed. They're all in that Ross area, dealing with MDU and reservation telephone.
And I'm going to try something here. Is Aqualon owned by Jethro Tull?
It could be. I don't believe so, though. Is that a song, Dave?
Owned by what?
Jethro Tull.
Oh.
Doesn't anybody remember Aqualung?
I don't.
but.
Oh, I'm sorry. You do. I didn't think you were that old.
All I know is the Bakken oil storage hub is bash.
Yes.
Okay, anything else, gentlemen? Anyone else? All right. Any closing comments,
no
Commissioner?
Closing
Commissioner?
Comments.
All right, let's reconvene at 11 o'clock for our administrative portion of our meeting. We'll close this part. Thank you.